The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Hey, we are back, second half of the show. Mike Griffith will join us shortly. Last week, Griff covered Tennessee, didn't he? Wonder if he'll cover the Dogs this week. We will also talk to Jackie Sherrill in our final hour as two of the teams that he coached, Texas A&M and Mississippi State, meet this weekend in Starkville. Kenneth is in California. Hello, Kenneth.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, so I had a sick day, and I listen to your show all the time, so I thought I'd call in.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk to you about the Auburn Tigers. I grew up 30 minutes away from there. I'm originally from Alabama. I think their running game is pretty good. What do you think about their quarterback situation?
Well, it's a mess because of the injury to Finley and the whatever with Calzada. He never quite materialized, so... Yeah, Ashford's a good compliment, but I don't think he's the answer.
Well, I don't know if you've ever heard of Valley, Alabama, but there's a pretty good prospect, Brent Osborne. He's still got eligibility. I think they should hit him up.
And I have heard of Valley.
They want his number.
It's a good idea. I'll pass that along.
We could get Brian Hart. There you go. Get Brian Harsin to hit him up. But hey, I love your show. I just want to call in and get your thoughts.
Thank you. I just sent Coach Harsin a text to let him know what's going on. How about Matt in South Carolina? Hello, Matt.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Excellent. Hey, I just wanted to share some good news that I got. So I'm originally from Wisconsin. I grew up Big Ten guy. Never really cared for the SEC. Kind of felt that their fans are a little homerish, too homerish for me.
Really? I can't believe you said that. I mean, SEC fans are very objective. They always look at the other side.
I have found that.
This show's indicative of that.
Exactly. I mean, that's why I married one. But she's a Vol, and we're going to our first game together. We're going to see Tennessee at South Carolina, and to add the insult into it for being the away fans, we're sitting in the cockaboose section.
Really?
Well, and I thought that's a very, the cockaboose. Yeah, I mean, a cockaboose. I don't know what the cockaboose is, but that's where I'm sitting.
You're about to find out, Matt.
I know. But yeah, I just wanted to share that good news.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. All the best. Randy? Randy sends it along his best greetings as well. Sitting in the cockaboose. Have you ever done that? I've seen it. Pat is in Opelika. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul.
Hi there.
Paul, I'm just going to give you my little take on Auburn. I've been an Auburn fan all my life. I sold programs and Coca-Cola's in the stadium when I was a kid, so I've been around a long time. Man, I am so embarrassed by Auburn, not Auburn football players, not Coach Harsin. I am embarrassed by the upper DBs that run our program.
Okay.
To bring a man in, commit that kind of money before the end of the season. They're wanting to fire him. They want to talk about he didn't recruit. No recruits come into Auburn or any other college when a coach is on the hot seat in his first year. So a lot of the blame is the lack of support. He hadn't had that support since he came to Auburn, and I don't know that he's a fit for the SEC, but I do know that he hadn't been treated well since he got here. But karma comes into play, and I'm going to take this karma all the way back to when they did Tommy Tuberville like they did. We came out a few years later and won a national championship with 24 Tommy Tuberville's seniors and Scam Cam. And from that point forward, you know, things have just gone downhill. And I don't know what those people are really looking for down there, but what coach in his right mind would want to come down there and not have control of the team, man. And it's just really embarrassing.
Well, Pat, let me ask you if you could tell us what the solution to the problem is.
You know, that's a $54 million question. I don't know what the solution to the problem is, but I know that no other SEC school is run like the program at Auburn. And there's not going to be an overnight fix or a one-year fix, man. We're in this for a while.
Pat, thank you. I don't think it takes that long. If you get the right person in, the culture will change quickly. You mentioned Chizik winning in 2010. Auburn played for the national championship again in 2013. And they played for the SEC championship a couple years after that as well. It has not been as bad as I think some of us make it out to be. Preston is in Louisiana. Hello, Preston.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
Very well. Thank you, Preston.
I've been listening to you for a long time. This is the second time I call. I hope this one goes better than the first one. Last time I called to criticize you about an opinion you had on Will Wade cheating at LSU, and I argued with you, and that didn't turn out too well for me. So I hope this one's
now,
better.
Now, were you suggesting that Will was not a cheater?
FBI. I was suggesting he must have been working for the FBI because called him in and reinstated him after his attorney came in. That turned out to be wrong, you know. So I said, I hope this call goes
that's okay.
A
I accept
better.
Your apology.
Yeah, I was dead wrong, so you're right. But you get paid for it. I don't.
Well, you
so
know what?
I will
tell you this, Preston. I wish I had never heard the name Will Wade. It's been one of the more unpleasant names in my career.
Well, you actually told me that on there. You told me, you said, this is going to be ended. I'm just going to stay out of it. I'm finished with it. That's the last comment you made.
Well, because
it turned out you were right all along.
It's one of those times, Preston, that against my better judgment, I told the truth as I knew it, and nobody wanted to hear it. And it doesn't matter now, but what is he doing, by the way? Has anybody seen Will Wade lately?
No.
I'm sure he made enough money to where he's probably – having a good time somewhere.
He's hanging out with Ogeron at the beach. Let's see if we can spend $30 or $40 million of LSU's money as fast as possible.
Well, we don't have any left. We already gave $100 million to Brian Kelly, so
well, he was at least that was at least an investment as opposed to a war you know
a waste of money.
Good money after bad debt.
Yeah, I know I have a limited time, Paul, so I'll tell you why I called.
Okay.
I was calling because I just wanted to express my opinion because you said it a few times. Everybody talks about transfer portal is absolutely killing college football. And I just want to give you a little evidence what I'm talking about because I think there's a lot more collateral damage than people are realizing. And I think the Appalachian State over Texas A&M, the Middle Tennessee over Miami, the Marshall over Notre Dame, the Georgia Southern over Nebraska, Tulane over Kansas State, we didn't used to see that. And I think the reason it's happening is because of the transfer portal. When we watched games just 5 years ago, like LSU versus Alabama, those teams were three deep at every position. I mean, they would the interior linemen would come in and out every other play, third down situations, long situations. They had great players, 4 and 5 stars at every position. We don't have that anymore. The depth's not there because a player doesn't get to start his first year, he's jumping in the transfer portal. And the problem with that is even if they do jump, what's going to happen is you're not going to be able to predict these games anymore. And that's why you have these upsets and what's going to happen. Vegas is going to stop giving lines on these games. And if you don't have a line on the game, you have such a lower viewership. Instead of having 10 million people watch the football games, you're going to have 5 million. And you know, having a television program, if you don't have advertising dollars, you're not going to have anything because what's going to happen is you're not going to have the viewership because people aren't going to be able to bet on the game. You see the guys watching 10 screens at Buffalo Wild Wings because they got game money bet on every game.
No, you're right.
If they don't have the line, if you don't have a line on those games, those people aren't going to bet them. So you're not going to have the advertising revenue.
But you know, the thing about football, the betting line doesn't necessarily draw you to the game at the beginning, but it will keep you there to the end. And I mean, there are plenty of games I've turned off because I don't bet, and I'm like going, it doesn't really matter to me. But if I bet, I guarantee you, I would be up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching the late game.
But what happens to the viewership? You know,
you're not. Yeah, you're 100% correct. I mean, there's a game on later. There is no betting line, so figure it out for yourself.
So is CBS going to pay $10 million or $100 million to the SEC for games that have half the viewership it has now, 2 years from now? Of course not, because they won't have the
FTC. Well, the good news is this. The TV contracts are pretty much locked down, but you're right.
Yeah, you're right. You
know, but they're also, in any contract, you're guaranteed a projection. So if they're expecting 10 million people to be watching and nobody watches, they'll want their money back pretty quickly.
Okay, the last point I'm going to make is this. All right, we've already hurt the schools because what they're having to pay. And a lot of people are saying, a lot of the talking heads are saying, well, what's happening is the difference in talent is shrinking, that the small schools are getting better. I disagree. I think the big schools are getting worse. Like Alabama losing by 1 point to Texas, who turns around and loses to Texas Tech, and Kansas State losing to Tulane, turn around and beats Oklahoma. That, to me, that's just proof that the bigger schools are not as good. It's not that the small schools are getting better. And what's going to end up happening, how the players are going to get hurt, is all this NIL money is going to go away, because if you keep jumping schools, how are you going to sell a jersey? You think Spencer Rattler can sell his jersey at South Carolina when he has the Oklahoma jersey out on the market? You know, it's just going to hurt everybody.
Preston, we are up against a break. Thanks for the call. But I will say one thing. As long as you have conference matchups, there will be a betting line, even if it's a mismatch. It doesn't matter. You know, the betting line, as long as there's a betting line, whether it's a 2-point spread or a 50-point spread, you will gather an audience. Let's take a short break. Mike Griffith joins us for his annual, well, not his annual, his weekly. Could be, would be better if it was annual?
Yeah.
I think it would, yeah. His about to be annual visit.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, and it's time to say hello to Mike Griffith. Always somewhere. Last week, while his team was getting ready for a gritty Kent State team, Mike abandoned them and went to Knoxville to get a scouting report. And today he's getting ready for basketball season at Stegman. Mike, are you covering Georgia this week, or do you find something else to do?
Well, you know, they have open basketball practice here, Paul. And when they've got, you know, six of these transfers coming in, five of them coming from NCAA tournament teams. You wonder if maybe Mike White can turn it around. But no, I'm just trying to stay some halfway decent sound quality. I don't think they're going to be testing the scoreboard in here anytime soon. A lot of football to talk. Yes, David, you're talking. You saw blowing it against A&M.
Yeah, if that's the attitude of the team, give me Alabama minus. I'm loading up.
Well, you know, the Bear, the ESPN Game Day odds maker, had a really good tweet today that four out of the last five games that Alabama's played on the road, they've won by 3 points or less, you know, and don't forget, or they failed to score more than that. They had the issue losing at A&M. They had the close game at Florida. Of course, we remembered what happened in the Auburn game at the end of the year in overtime. So this is an Alabama team with Bryce Young that has not played especially well away from home. I think this is a really big weekend for both Alabama and Georgia to prove to the country that the SEC is not kind of wavering a little bit. I'm getting this Ohio State vibe. I mean, the Buckeyes are the ones that are closing teams out impressively. Kirk Herbstreit's talking them up. And, you know, Georgia with the shaky win, as you pointed out, over Kent State. I mean, 17 points. Alabama with their road struggles historically. And Arkansas people that actually believe they have a chance to win. I think this is a big weekend for Alabama and Georgia to make statements on the road at Missouri and Arkansas, respectively.
Other than that, and both are heavy favorites, what else has gotten the Griff's attention this week in the SEC?
Billy Napier's two-point conversion strategy. I don't know what rocket scientist or what person from Louisiana that he's talking to, but that's a game that Florida should have been able to put into overtime. And I understand he talks about, well, we wanted to declare early whether we were going to try to win or send it into overtime, but he basically took a chance to win out of his team's hands by going, you know, some of the decisions he's made have been panicky to me. I thought there was an early attempt at a fourth down conversion against Kentucky, and then this decision against Tennessee to go for two when the Gators had a chance at the end. And they did actually wrestle the momentum away. I was very impressed with both Florida and Tennessee in many respects, Paul. Very game effort from both of those programs. It made me think that these teams might be a little bit more of a threat against Georgia later this year.
I know you had to watch some of the Auburn game as well, getting ready for this Titanic matchup in Como. What's your view on of the Auburn situation?
Yeah, man, the clock's ticking. You know, it's sad, you know, when you've got former Alabama quarterback saying that, you know, with sources inside of Auburn saying Brian Harsin's already been told he's going to be fired. I mean, I kind of felt that last year that if they didn't be – I just kind of feel like this is something it got away from Auburn. First of all, they shouldn't have fired Gus Malzahn. I mean, here's a guy that proved he could beat Nick Saban, something very few coaches have done. But, they can't help themselves. They always want more. The greed, anybody can coach here. We're such a great place. Shouldn't have fired Gus Malzahn, number one. Number two, hire a coach in a COVID year. I mean, the guy can't get out there on the road and recruit, Paul. I mean, that really put Harsin behind. And then last year, you kind of had the off-field scandal kind of hanging over the top of the program. So this is a guy that's never really lifted off. There's never really been any momentum behind Auburn football. And the chance that they had, Alabama snuffed out with Bryce Young's historic drive in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Now, you wonder, you know, hey, if Auburn beats LSU, hey, they're 4-1, right? Yeah, they're 4-1, but then they're going to Georgia the next week, and Kirby's going to crush Auburn. So, to me, it's just a matter of time. If Jaden Daniels is healthy for LSU, I fully expect LSU to win that game. I think Auburn's only shot is if that Arizona State transfer doesn't come out of the tunnel. That's their only shot, even though they're at home. It's just an unfortunate situation, and you know, there's a lot of room for second guessing whether or not Auburn should have fired Gus Malzahn, because I don't know who's on deck. I would say in order would probably be, you know, Hugh Freeze one. I think they would try to get Kiffin. I don't really know if this is a better job than Ole Miss right now. And or Deion Sanders. You throw the Hail Mary and try to get a Deion Sanders. But I really think Freeze would be the guy if they make this move. It's just a matter of when and how do those semantics work out with Commissioner Sankey, et cetera.
Mike Griffith with us from Stegman in Athens. Intriguing game in Starkville. We'll talk to Jackie Sherrill an hour from now. You've been
That's great.
Had a lot to say about the Aggies this year. They won last week, however they won it. What about this week?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm taping it. Jackie Sherrill, that's a great guest. I'll be interested to hear what Coach Sherrill has to say. He was there and took that Mississippi State program to the SEC championship game in 1998. A lot of people don't realize Mississippi State darn near beat Tennessee in the 98 SEC championship game, if not for a deep pass from T. Martin to Peerless Price. I got a lot of respect for what Coach Sherrill did there. I don't think they've been back since. I think this is a game Mississippi State wins. And, you know, I was correct last week predicting Jimbo Fisher would get the win. I know a lot of people, there was a little luck involved, but, you know, Jimbo just had that swagger, that feel. But I just kind of feel like the luck runs out a little bit. You know, they've lost their best receiver, Paul. And at the end of the day, you got to have players, man. And I just don't know that A&M has the players on the perimeter. And, you know, Max Johnson, this is only his third game as a starter. And I think Mississippi State is so much better than they played in the second half at LSU. I really think the Bulldogs are going to win this football game and kind of create a little bit of turmoil there in the SEC West. As always, it stays very stirred up. I actually thought about those teams when I wore this tie. I don't know when else I'd wear this ugly of a tie. But, you know, you got two maroon-clad teams. I think two of the ugliest uniforms in the SEC. So there's a sport coat that matches it. So this is just for Mississippi State and A&M, which I expect to be an ugly game that's won by the Bulldogs amid all those cowbells.
What happens in Oxford when Kentucky comes to town this weekend?
Now, that's a great game. Those are two contenders to me, two teams with a puncher's chance of squeezing into the SEC championship game if Georgia or Alabama were to falter. Now, I'm by no means predicting that that's going to happen, but I am going to be watching Alabama and Georgia closely. I don't think either one of these teams, Paul, have been nearly as dominant as we might have thought they would be. I mean, you look at Alabama and they're ranked number one in this and number one in this. Hey, they barely beat Texas, all right? At the end of the day, they barely beat Texas, right? You look at Georgia, they're only 17 points better than a Mid-American Conference team. They're missing their best receiver, A.D. Mitchell's been out with an ankle. The other receiver, Ladd McConkey, he's been slowed by an ankle to the point of being distracted and fumbling a punt return. You know, there's talk whether or not they're leading leading running back Kenny McIntosh, who actually leads the team in catches. Is he going to be 100%? You know, so Georgia is down some skill position guys against a Missouri team, Paul, that last year is one Stetson Bennett fourth down conversion pass away from actually leading that Georgia team last year in the first quarter in Athens. So you got to believe Missouri is going to press on the outside. They got to hope for some wind gusts of 10 to 12 miles an hour and that they can keep it close. Unfortunately for them, they didn't sign JT Daniels. Eli Drinkwitz had a shot. He struck out. And so now Daniels is at West Virginia. He's taken him from 88 to like 18th in the nation in offense. And Missouri's struggling with a quarterback with like four touchdown passes and four picks through four games. And this incredibly talented receiver who only has 10 catches in four games. So, you know, Eli blew this game last summer, but he can keep it close if Georgia is missing some of those skilled playmakers and there's just enough wind to throw that passing game off.
So let me get back to that existential question that you raised earlier, Georgia versus Alabama and the struggles that both seem to be having. It was just 2 weeks ago when Georgia looked so dominant. Is it just a matter of health on the team, or is there something else?
Well, you got to wonder. I mean, you got to wonder because they look dynamic against Oregon. They look like world beaters. And then they went in and stomped South Carolina, albeit a South Carolina team that was missing five defensive starters and turned the ball over early. You just have to wonder, though, if it's a matter of focus and playing to the level of competition. You know, you find out who you are when you go on the road. And we're going to find out a lot about this Georgia team. You know, they had a DB that's likely going to – a starting DB likely will be suspended, had a DUI last Sunday. That's not the marking of a Kirby Smart championship team when players aren't accountable to one another and make mistakes like that. Young kids, but still, in season, what are you thinking, man? And that can't happen for this team. This team, unlike last year's team, does not have proven championship depth. So when I tell you that Kenny McIntosh could be out, I mean, that should make you nervous. Because last year, if James Cook was out or Zamir White might have needed a breather, you had two skilled guys ready to go. Right now, there's no real depth at running back. There's no experience depth. At wide receiver, there's no real experience depth at the wide receiver position. So this Georgia team is a little bit thinner. I think Kirby is managing the roster carefully, trying to keep everybody healthy because November is the critical stretch. I don't think Missouri's a threat to upset, but I think they're a threat to keep it close and interesting for a half.
I feel like every time we wrap up, I'm afraid I've missed something because you have a question, Randy?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Well, let's get to the, you know, I talked a little bit about Kentucky and Ole Miss earlier, Paul, and, you know, this is intriguing to me because I think Lane Kiffin has done a great job, as good as anybody, with the portal, and you're going to see that Ole Miss portal defense put to the test by Will Levis and the Kentucky team that gets Chris Rodriguez back. I mean, that was the SEC's leading returning rusher. He was suspended the first four games. I want to see how much of a lift he gives Kentucky, and I want to find out about the Vaught-Hemingway crowd. You know, Lane Kiffin has made a little bit of noise about those fans not living up to his expectation. They're going to need those fans. And the Rebels, they've got a great running game. But what is Jackson Dart going to do against this savvy Kentucky defense that has already gone into the swamp and turned a game there with a very raucous crowd? To me, that this is an incredible game for Kentucky and Ole Miss. I don't know when we're ever going to say incredible in Kentucky and Ole Miss in the same football sentence again, but they're both top 15 teams, and I think they're both outside contenders. This is a really important game I'm going to be tuned into.
What time is tip-off tonight, Mike?
I don't know how Mike White's got him working. Listen, you know, Georgia hired a Florida coach, right? They want to get back to the NCAA tournament. They're working hard, I can promise you that, because Georgia basketball knows they have an uphill climb as well.
The one and only Mike Griffith joining us from inside. There were no interruptions. It was just a very substantive conversation. Mike, we'll see you next week. When we come back, the caller of the year on the Feinbaum Show on deck. Legend right around the corner.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, and it's time to say hello to Mike Griffith. Always somewhere. Last week, while his team was getting ready for a gritty Kent State team, Mike abandoned them and went to Knoxville to get a scouting report. And today he's getting ready for basketball season at Stegman. Mike, are you covering Georgia this week, or did you find something else to do?
Well, you know, they have open basketball practice here, Paul. I mean, they've got, you know, six of these transfers coming in, five of them coming from NCAA tournament teams. You wonder if maybe Mike White can turn it around. But no, I'm just trying to stay out of the wind so we can have some halfway decent sound quality. I don't think they're going to be testing the scoreboard in here anytime soon. A lot of football to talk. Interesting, the guest, David, you're talking about. He says we got to move past it after he spent about 5 minutes making excuses for Arkansas blowing it against A&M.
Yeah, I – If that's the attitude of the team, give me Alabama minus. I'm loading up.
Well, you know, the Bear, the ESPN Game Day odds maker, had a really good tweet today that four out of the last five games that Alabama's played on the road, they've won by 3 points or less. You know, and don't forget, or they failed to score more than that. They had the issue losing at A&M. They had the close game at Florida. Of course, we remembered what happened in the Auburn game at the end of the year in overtime. So this is an Alabama team with Bryce Young that has not played especially well away from home. I think this is a really big weekend for both Alabama and Georgia to prove to the country that the SEC is not kind of wavering a little bit. I'm getting this Ohio State vibe. I mean, the Buckeyes are the ones that are closing teams out impressively. Kirk Herbstreit's talking them up, and you know, Georgia with the shaky win, as you pointed out, over Kent State. I mean, 17 points. Alabama with their road struggles historically, and Arkansas people that actually believe they have a chance to win. I think this is a big weekend for Alabama and Georgia to make statements on the road at Missouri and Arkansas, respectively.
Other than that, and both are heavy favorites, what else has gotten the Griff's attention this week in the SEC?
Billy Napier's two-point conversion strategy. I don't know what rocket scientist or what person from Louisiana that he's talking to, but that's a game that Florida should have been able to put into overtime. And I understand he talks about, well, we wanted to declare early whether we were going to try to win or send it into overtime, but he basically took a chance to win out of his team's hands by going, you know, some of the decisions he's made have been panicky to me. I thought there was an early attempt at a fourth down conversion against Kentucky, and then this decision against Tennessee to go for two when the Gators had a chance at the end. And they did actually wrestle the momentum away. I was very impressed with both Florida and Tennessee in many respects, Paul. Very game effort from both of those programs. It made me think that these teams might be a little bit more of a threat against Georgia later this year.
I know you had to watch some of the Auburn game as well, getting ready for this titanic matchup in Como. What's your view on the Auburn situation?
Yeah, man, the clock's ticking. You know, it's sad, you know, when you've got former Alabama quarterback saying that, you know, with sources inside of Auburn saying Brian Harsin's already been told he's going to be fired. I mean, I kind of felt that last year that if they didn't be – I just kind of feel like this is something it got away from Auburn. First of all, they shouldn't have fired Gus Malzahn. I mean, here's a guy that proved he could beat Nick Saban, something very few coaches have done. But, they can't help themselves. They always want more. The greed, anybody can coach here. We're such a great place. Shouldn't have fired Gus Malzahn, number one. Number two, hire a coach in a COVID year. I mean, the guy can't get out there on the road and recruit, Paul. I mean, that really put Harsin behind. And then last year, you kind of had the off-field scandal kind of hanging over the top of the program. So this is a guy that's never really lifted off. There's never really been any momentum behind Auburn football. And the chance that they had, Alabama snuffed out with Bryce Young's historic drive in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Now, you wonder, you know, hey, if Auburn beats LSU, hey, they're 4-1, right? Yeah, they're 4-1, but then they're going to Georgia the next week, and Kirby's going to crush Auburn. So, to me, it's just a matter of time. If Jaden Daniels is healthy for LSU, I fully expect LSU to win that game. I think Auburn's only shot is if that Arizona State transfer doesn't come out of the tunnel. That's their only shot, even though they're at home. It's just an unfortunate situation, and, you know, there's a lot of room for second-guessing whether or not Auburn should have fired Gus Malzahn, because I don't know who's on deck. I would say in order it would probably be Hugh Freeze one. I think they would try to get Kiffin. I don't really know if this is a better job than Ole Miss right now. And or Deion Sanders. You throw the Hail Mary and try to get a Deion Sanders. But I really think Freeze would be the guy if they make this move. It's just a matter of when and how do those semantics work out with Commissioner Sankey, et cetera.
Mike Griffith with us from Stegman in Athens. Intriguing game in Starkville. We'll talk to Jackie Sherrill an hour from now.
That's great.
Had a lot to say about the Aggies this year. They won last week, however they won it. What about this week?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm taping it. Jackie Sherrill, that's a great guest. I'll be interested to hear what Coach Sherrill has to say. He was there and took that Mississippi State program to the SEC championship game in 1998. A lot of people don't realize Mississippi State darn near beat Tennessee in the 98 SEC championship game, if not for a deep pass from T. Martin to Peerless Price. I got a lot of respect for what Coach Sherrill did there. I don't think they've been back since. I think this is a game Mississippi State wins. And, you know, I was correct last week predicting Jimbo Fisher would get the win. I know a lot of people, there was a little luck involved, but, you know, Jimbo just had that swagger, that feel. But I just kind of feel like the luck runs out a little bit. You know, they've lost their best receiver, Paul. And at the end of the day, you got to have players, man. And I just don't know that A&M has the players on the perimeter. And, you know, Max Johnson, this is only his third game as a starter. And I think Mississippi State is so much better than they played in the second half at LSU. I really think the Bulldogs are going to win this football game and kind of create a little bit of turmoil there in the SEC West. As always, it stays very stirred up. I actually thought about those teams when I wore this tie. I don't know when else I'd wear this ugly of a tie. But, you know, you got two maroon-clad teams, I think two of the ugliest uniforms in the SEC. So there's a sport coat that matches it. So this is just for Mississippi State and A&M, which I expect to be an ugly game that's won by the Bulldogs amid all those cowbells.
What happens in Oxford when Kentucky comes to town this weekend?
Now, that's a great game. Those are two contenders to me, two teams with a puncher's chance of squeezing into the SEC championship game if Georgia or Alabama were to falter. Now, I'm by no means predicting that that's going to happen, but I am going to be watching Alabama and Georgia closely. I don't think either one of these teams, Paul, have been nearly as dominant as we might have thought they would be. I mean, you look at Alabama and they're ranked number one in this and number one in this. Hey, they barely beat Texas, all right? At the end of the day, they barely beat Texas, right? You look at Georgia, they're only 17 points better than a Mid-American Conference team. They're missing their best receiver. A.D. Mitchell's been out with an ankle. The other receiver, Ladd McConkey, he's been slowed by an ankle to the point of being distracted and fumbling a punt return. You know, there's talk whether or not they're leading running back Kenny McIntosh, who actually leads the team in catches. Is he going to be 100%? You know, so Georgia is down some skill position guys against a Missouri team, Paul, that last year is one Stetson Bennett fourth down conversion pass away from actually leading that Georgia team last year in the first quarter in Athens. So you got to believe Missouri is going to press on the outside. They got to hope for some wind gusts of 10 to 12 miles an hour and that they can keep it close. Unfortunately for them, they didn't sign JT Daniels. Eli Drinkwitz had a shot. He struck out. And so now Daniels is at West Virginia. He's taking them from 88 to like 18th in the nation in offense. And Missouri's struggling with a quarterback with like four touchdown passes and four picks through four games. And this incredibly talented receiver who only has 10 catches in four games. So, you know, Eli blew this game last summer, but he can keep it close if Georgia is missing some of those skilled playmakers and there's just enough wind to throw that passing game off.
So let me get back to that existential question that you raised earlier, Georgia versus Alabama and the struggles that both seem to be having. It was just 2 weeks ago when Georgia looked so dominant. Is it just a matter of health on the team, or is there something else?
Well, you got to wonder. I mean, you got to wonder because they look dynamic against Oregon. They look like world beaters. And then they went in and stomped South Carolina, albeit a South Carolina team that was missing five defensive starters and turned the ball over early. You just have to wonder, though, if it's a matter of focus and playing to the level of competition. You know, you find out who you are when you go on the road. And we're going to find out a lot about this Georgia team. You know, they had a DB that's likely going to – a starting DB likely will be suspended, had a DUI last Sunday. That's not the marking of a Kirby Smart championship team when players aren't accountable to one another and make mistakes like that. Young kids, but still, in season, what are you thinking, man? And that can't happen for this team. This team, unlike last year's team, does not have proven championship depth. So when I tell you that Kenny McIntosh could be out, I mean, that should make you nervous. Because last year, if James Cook was out or Zamir White might have needed a breather, you had two skilled guys ready to go. Right now, there's no real depth at running back. There's no experience depth. At wide receiver, there's no real experience depth at the wide receiver position. So this Georgia team is a little bit thinner. I think Kirby is managing the roster carefully, trying to keep everybody healthy because November is the critical stretch. I don't think Missouri's a threat to upset, but I think they're a threat to keep it close and interesting for a half.
I feel like every time we wrap up, I'm afraid I've missed something because you have a question, Randy?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Well, let's get to the, you know, I talked a little bit about Kentucky and Ole Miss earlier, Paul, and, you know, this is intriguing to me because I think Lane Kiffin has done a great job, as good as anybody with the portal, and you're going to see that Ole Miss portal defense put to the test by Will Levis and a Kentucky team that gets Chris Rodriguez back. I mean, that was the SEC's leading returning rusher. He was suspended the first four games. I want to see how much of a lift he gives Kentucky, and I want to find out about the Vaught-Hemingway crowd. You know, Lane Kiffin has made a little bit of noise about those fans not living up to his expectation. They're going to need those fans. And the Rebels, they've got a great running game. But what is Jackson Dart going to do against this savvy Kentucky defense that has already gone into the swamp and turned a game there with a very raucous crowd? To me, this is an incredible game for Kentucky and Ole Miss. I don't know when we're ever going to say incredible in Kentucky and Ole Miss in the same football sentence again, but they're both top 15 teams, and I think they're both outside contenders. This is a really important game I'm going to be tuned into.
What time is tip-off tonight, Mike?
I don't know how – Mike White's got him working. Listen, you know, Georgia hired a Florida coach, right? They want to get back to the NCAA tournament. They're working hard, I can promise you that, because Georgia basketball knows they have an uphill climb as well.
The one and only – Mike Griffith joining us from inside. There were no interruptions. It was just a very substantive conversation. Mike, we'll see you next week. When we come back, the caller of the year on the Feinbaum Show on deck. Legend right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back as the third hour comes to a close. Bruce is in Atlanta. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, I guess it's Bruce.
No, that's you. I hope it is, too. Good afternoon.
Good. How are you?
We are doing great.
Listen,
thank you.
We're trying to respond to Legend. We're really getting just sick of him laughing at his own jokes and kind of wonder why you never call him out on it. No one else is laughing but him.
So you, I'll ask an obvious question here since you've answered it, but you don't find any humor in what he says?
No, he laughs at his own jokes. The time that Alabama almost lost to Texas, which, by the way, we're wondering why they do so poorly on the road all the time. He said, well, I don't know why those guys are wasting my time. He's probably sitting on his couch. I mean, he doesn't have to watch, but don't dog out your team, you know, and then come back and, like, now they're the greatest. So that's our beef.
Okay, so who do you find, if anyone, humorous on the show?
Oh, just Cat Daddy. We like him. A lot of people. We're not a fan of Jim. We like my man. We don't like Jeff.
Okay.
Not a fan of Jeff.
Yeah. What kind of dog do you have?
But on that note, you know what
you
I wondered
the
is...
the dog doesn't like Jeff either.
Yeah, I know. What we were wondering, though, is I know you said that you watch Ohio State, and what my question was is, how come, you know, like in the BCS, they really did all the stats and everything, and on the strength of schedule, I'm wondering why they never have to play anybody but teams in their conference. And when they play the Powder Puff teams, they're not anything tough.
I mean, Ohio State opened the season against Notre Dame.
Yeah, but I mean, after that, they don't play any SEC teams. They scheduled Georgia a long time ago, and then they bowed out.
Well,
why they never schedule any SEC teams.
I feel like Ohio State plays a very competitive schedule. They have played in the last 10 years. They played Oklahoma. They played.
It's mainly the SEC teams we're wondering about.
Well, partly because they could easily end up playing SEC teams at the end of the season. And, I mean, they have played SEC teams deep into the past. They played Alabama once in a preseason matchup. But, no, they don't traditionally play many games. But, on the other hand, I don't see a lot of SEC teams playing Big Ten teams either in the preseason.
Well, I think our conference is a lot stronger. I mean, maybe people would disagree, but...
Well,
I
understand the SEC. In my opinion, the SEC is better, but you know, don't sell Ohio State short. I think they're after Alabama and Georgia, they are literally the next best team in the country, and they may be better than that.
Oh, they are. They are. I do agree with that. I'm just wondering. We saw Penn State play Auburn, and it's just nice to see a matchup in the middle of the season with a SEC team.
Well,
in
I
the
understand
Big 10
that.
But
schedules are complex. But they're playing Notre Dame next year in South Bend. No criticism there. That's as good as it gets. We will take a short break, and we're back after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.